Welcome to Molly and Pete Save Everything. I'm Pete.
I'm Molly.
And we are back after a couple of weeks off. I had a busy couple of weekends with, you had a Renegade Craft Fair.
Yep.
You ran a marathon.
Yeah.
And
it was a lot.
So we took a couple of weeks off, but we're back.
We were going to record an episode during the week on like a Wednesday or something. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, get home from work, make sure we got to record it. Then we got in bed and we were like, oh, we forgot to record the podcast. So better late than never.
Yeah. So what have we been up to?
Yeah. So we did 2 weeks ago, we did Renegade. There was Renegade was Saturday and Sunday, and it's the big one that's in Wicker Park on Division. Outside, it's huge. There's like 300 vendors. It's so crowded.
This is a craft fair where people line the streets with booths and sell their stuff.
Yeah. Like, Renegade was sort of the first people to... It's been going on for a long time. I started doing it when it was in like the park in Wicker Park, and it was just like table set up, and there were 10 of us. And this was like 12 years ago or 13 years ago that I started doing it. I think this was like their 15th year, maybe. So it's really grown, and they were one of the first to do this like more indie hipster craft fair and sort of like take back the negative connotations around craft fairs. Craft fairs being sort of like old lady, doily, crafty-ish.
Stuff that you see at the Oakland
Hilton.
This
is more like makers, a maker fair, independent maker fair. And so, but I still feel like there's like weird negative connotations around saying, I always feel kind of weird when I say craft fair, like that someone's going to think that what I do is crafty or small, or I mean, it's relatively small, but it's still a business that has employees. And so, yes, I always feel weird when I say craft fair, but this one is huge. And so then they did a thing on the Friday night before. Starbucks had this huge huge North American conference in Chicago. It was going on for a few days at McCormick Place. And the last day was at the United Center, which is so a huge venue. And I guess there were like, I can't remember what the numbers were. Many, many, I can't even remember now, but so many tens of thousands of people there. And so they had this like huge event, the closing night event. And so Renegade asked a few Chicago, it started out 30 and then it ended up being like 10 or 12 people to be a part of this event. And so they were going to do a little, like just a little strip, like a mini Renegade of local makers. And this was something where they had like, they had a stage where musicians performed. Then they had like a stage, a dance floor where there were DJs. They had like an outside arcade. They had all this food and booze, and I, you know, like I'm hesitant to say yes to things. I think it's just because I've been burned too many times by bad events.
Yeah.
And I thought like, oh, this won't be that hard to do. Like, I'll already have all my stuff together. It'll be in the car, which I know it's very well that even if you have everything ready, Renegade's so much work. Like, it's gonna be hard. And I was like, really, like, why did I sign up for this? And I got there and I was just like, why am I doing this? And it ended up being like super busy the whole time. It was awesome. The people who were attending were really like positive and appreciative that we were there, and we were all like busy from start to finish, and it was super like well done and exciting and big. And I kept like talking to other people who had done it, and they're like, do you know that John Legend was there? Do you know that Chance the Rapper was there? I'm like, I had no idea this was going on. It was just in my little
area.
They
were there shopping?
No, they were performing. Oh. So this was big, and it kind of, I was like, you know, maybe I should say yes to more things. But then I'm like, no, this is a one-off thing. This is the only one that is ever worth it to do like something kind of small.
Yeah, Renegade is a lot of work.
Yeah, it's
Saturday
so exhausting.
Sunday.
Yeah.
And I feel that they probably asked a bunch of people to do it, and they were like, man, I can't do an extra
day.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be worth it to make $100.
Yeah. Exactly. Because that's how it usually turns out.
Yeah.
And they sent out like an email thanking everyone, and they were like, we understand that Renegade is like a lot, and that to do another thing the night before is asking a lot. So they were aware of that. But we were all like looking around each other like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. We're so glad that we're the 30% that said yes.
And Renegade, it's a lot of work because it's a lot of standing, and it's usually relatively busy for the whole time from 11 to 7. I would do that every single day if I could just do 11 to 7, talk to people.
Yeah.
It's the setup.
Yeah, the setup,
like,
and the
breakdown. Like, on Saturday morning, like, driving the car through a really narrow stretch on Division to try to, you know, get your stuff in, and then pulling out a tent which was broken.
Yeah.
That you had just purchased a new tent, but then it was broken.
We had this kind of like sad tent for a while, and I would like walk down the stretch and I would look at everybody else's tents and they looked really nice and mine looked really sad. And I'm like, hey, we need to buy a new tent. It was also, our old tent was really hard to open and close. And like every time we did it, a screw would fall out. We're like, I guess that's okay. So I bought this new tent, and because of the Starbucks thing, I didn't have a ton of time to like, it came like the day before, and I didn't have a ton of time to make sure I knew exactly what to do with it and how to put it together. But I thought like, oh, it'll be fine. This is the brand that everybody likes. This is the model that everybody likes. It'll be fine. And
yeah, I took it out the night before on Friday, and it seemed easy. The people that were on the instructions looked like they were having no problem putting this thing up.
So you dropped me off and all this stuff, and then you went to go park, and you had a lot of trouble finding parking, like a lot more. We give ourselves 2 hours to set up, and that's, in the beginning when we started doing this, we were always scrambling and things would go wrong and it was horrible. But the past, like now we've gotten good at it. We're fast and it's easy and we know what to do and it's pretty seamless. So yeah, you left me with a tent and you was taking forever. You weren't coming back. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to get this tent up. So I started pulling it apart, and it's really hard to get apart. It's really resisting. And so my neighbors start to help me, and everyone's like, why is this so hard to pull apart? Like, what are we doing wrong? And we're looking at the directions and we're like trying different things and we can't figure it out. And then we realize that the pole that pushes it up in the middle is broken, like bent and broken in half. And that's what's keeping it from pulling apart. That's what's keeping from pushing everything. That was like the key to it all. So finally we were able to kind of like make it work enough that we could open it. So then we finally got it open, and then I'm trying to like put the walls up and I'm really like struggling with that. And a couple friends walked by and they ended up like helping. And then I'm like super sweaty and I've got like 30 minutes to get all my product out. You finally had found parking and came back. And so we had been trying to fix it for like, I don't know, like 45 minutes. And then you guys came like all fresh and you're like, oh, we can fix this. And I was like, okay, like you just have at it.
I had texted you saying, I used to live like right down the street on Wood and Division. And it was fine. It was like a nice little neighborhood. You had no trouble finding parking. But like with Renegade, when you're bringing thousands of people in, it's impossible to find parking. And a lot of that neighborhood now is zoned where you can't park during the day. So it's really hard. You have to park really far. So I like texted you. I'm like, it's taking me a long time. I'm not going to be there for 20 minutes. And you're like, oh, that's fine. I'm putting the tent up. I'm like, oh, great. I don't have to worry about the tent.
Yeah.
The tent will be up. And then I turned the corner and I saw your two friends, you know, that run what's the other craft fair that they
show
run?
Of hands.
Show of Hands. Yeah. Everybody's struggling to get this thing. I'm like, what is going on? I thought I was going to like roll in
and
the
it was
tent,
all going
like,
to be totally done
be
and
finished.
Ready to go.
Yeah. But no, it was not.
Well, you were really stressing and I didn't want to like add to your stress. So I was like protecting you or me. I don't know. I was minimizing some stress. Anyway, you guys were all trying the things that like we had already been
done.
Trying for like 40 minutes. I was like, all right. And I kept saying like, well, we already tried that. So I mean, I was so appreciative that they came and helped early.
To have
an extra set of hands was awesome, but I had already tried all the things. And then just like getting the walls up was harder because instead of being like, oh, I've got an hour to get this done, I'm like, I have 5 minutes to get this done. So it just made it that much more stressful. But we got it all done. I mean, we were like 95% set up by the time it opened.
And then it all worked out.
You just kind of like tweak things. Yeah, it was a good weekend. It was super busy. And
a couple of people stopped by that listened to the podcast, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's always nice seeing faces that listen.
Yeah. It always brings like people that we know from every different way. Stop by.
You're usually always kind of in the same area around Division and Wood-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And this time we were right across from Phyllis's Musical Inn.
Yeah.
Which is like one of the holdouts of that area.
Yeah.
You know, it's still just your
one of
basic
the few
dive bar as opposed
like,
to a lot of these sports
bars. Yeah, this
bars
used to be like
exploded in the area.
A lot hipper street, and then somehow like super bro-y Big Ten sports bars took over and totally changed.
And Phyllis's, they've embraced Renegade because there's a sign out in front of the bar saying, you know, like, join us for the Renegade Craft Fair. Mm-hmm. You know, like, come on in. There's deals. They have a nice patio, and they had live bands out there. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, we had to hear the live bands that were playing at Phyllis's musical inn.
Somehow, there's every year we have to deal with something. So, like, one year we were across from some sports bar where they had these, like, super fan dudes playing
drums
really loudly for the Bears game. Mm-hmm. So we had to deal with that. Sometimes we've been like right up by the DJ, like across from the DJ. Mm-hmm. And so it's really loud and you can't like talk to anybody. So they have like this beer garden, and there's this place in New Orleans called Bacchanal. I feel like a lot of people have been there and will know it, and like if you've been there, you love it.
Yeah.
And it's always like our first place to recommend to people who are going to New Orleans. And I heard somebody walk by and they were like, oh, that's just like that place in New Orleans. And I was like, no, it's not.
I mean, it's outside and there's music.
Yes,
it's
but like, that's it.
That's where the similarities end.
But yeah, they had like this, they had a variety of bands. It would be like a bad cover band, and then it would be like some really shaky blues.
Yeah, really bad blues band.
Yeah, and so what was the song that the guy sang?
Potatoes?
He was like, they call me Lil Mashed Potato.
And that's the last thing you want to hear when you're shopping. You know, you want to kind of hear like upbeat music, you know, some hits from the 80s perhaps, you know, to put you in a good mood. There's nothing worse than seeing like white people dancing to blues music.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of that out there.
Yeah. There was also this guy there was some good people watching. There was like a guy who was like in a band who would like hang out and like smoke or whatever on the sidewalk and harass girls. So we watched that happening too. Then we were also across from Smoke Daddy, so it smelled like barbecue. It was like a combination of Phyllis's smells like old, you know, like whatever they used to clean old bars, mm-hmm. That smell plus like that. Yeah, it's like it smells like a bowling alley or something, like that smell plus the barbecue. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was great. I would like, I'm like, I gotta take a break. And I just go to like the candle place, like a couple down from us, just like smell something good. And so like Smoke Daddy, they had TVs on and there's like people there watching football or whatever. But the U.S. Open was going on too. And I was really tempted. I wanted to, like, if I sat in just the right spot and looked like through my card racks, I could see the TV really clearly. I was like, do you think that they okay if I went and asked them to put the tennis on?
Put the sound up really loud. That's the thing. Yeah, the U.S. Open happens during this time every year. And we invest so much time and effort into watching the U.S. Open, keeping track of scores, talking about it every day. Mm-hmm. And then the day of the men's championship, we always work and we never get to see it.
It was still going on. We were finished. We were like watching it in the car on my phone on the way home. And yeah, it's a bummer to have to miss that. You often have to miss the first Bears game. That didn't happen this year. But yeah, there's always a lot that goes on that weekend. But Renegade is worth it.
I remember there was one year where Joe Keery from Stranger Things was at Renegade. That I could not stop seeing pictures of him on social media.
Do you see his haircut?
He's got sort of a bowl cut.
Yes, and he's not cute. Like, he needs his hair. He's only cute with that hair. When he doesn't have that hair, he just looks like a regular schlub.
Yeah.
He's not cute at all. I'm very disturbed by this. He was at, because it was like, he was at like a fashion, was it with Fashion Week or something?
I don't remember.
It was some fashion-related thing with his girlfriend. I guess it's for a role, but gosh, couldn't you like push it back somehow? It looks like an Oasis, like a Gallagher Brothers haircut. So he has like bangs, but they're like curled bangs.
Yeah.
Not curly bangs.
Yeah.
Like, looks like he used like a round brush when he was drying it and like made it like cup under. It's very disturbing.
We haven't finished this latest season of Stranger Things.
We haven't watched anything. I've only watched Bachelor in Paradise. Now that's done. So I can like have my life
back.
Your
freedom, yeah.
Then you just watch like sports or people talking about sports. So we're super behind.
Nothing is worse than seeing 18 episodes of This Is Us on the DVR.
We have like 2 years of This Is Us sitting on our DVR. But I mean, there's other things besides that that we're just like, I don't know when we're ever going to get caught up.
Once the weather turns,
yeah,
just like we don't see movies that much anymore because when there's movies that we want to go see, it's like, oh, you know, it's so nice out. Yeah. We've been waiting so long for this. Once the weather turns,
the TV is the same.
Yeah, we'll get caught up.
But one show that we have watched, though, that we really like is Southside. And so if you haven't watched that, it's on Comedy Central. It's filmed in Chicago. It's just, like, very Chicago. And we really loved the show Detroiters, which is also on Comedy Central. And it has a similar feel to that. There's, like, a smallness to it. There's a very Chicago-ness. But even if you don't, like, know Chicago, I still think it's right. really funny.
Like, the comedy is still broad enough for everybody to laugh at it. But there are so many great inside Chicago jokes about just street names and, you know, certain little, you know, Kennedy King College and things like that. If you know it, it makes it a little bit extra funny. Do we even know when it's on?
No, it's on our DVR.
So I can search.
Or it's on, how do you watch Comedy Central?
What do you mean, how do you watch it?
If you're streaming it. What's Comedy Central on, Hulu?
I don't know.
Anyway. Whatever.
Yeah, just
Google
search.
It. Why don't we have to take care of everybody? They can figure it out.
But I mean, I guess normally you say, yeah, it's on Tuesday nights at 9, but
well,
people don't watch TV.
The other
like
night
anymore.
You were like, I miss TV. Like, I understand. Like, I was saying, like, oh, yeah, like when you would have to, like, rush home on a Thursday to make sure you saw The Office. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. You miss, like, watching TV in real time on the, you know, like, where, whatever. Like, what do I watch tonight? What comes on tonight? Like, I never, other than The Bachelor, I think I never think about what comes on that night. I just watch, it just gets recorded and I watch it. So, or I stream it or whatever. So.
Yeah. When it was like, you know, The Office, 30 Rock and Parks and Rec, the most recent, you know, must see Thursday night for me. I loved watching those shows. You come home, you knew that you had The Office, Parks and Rec and 30 Rock to look forward to. And then you also had Friday morning, the drive to work with Jim Rifato to look forward to, where you just talk about that show. Like, you don't have that same
that
thing.
That water cooler moment.
Yeah, the next. Because a lot of times it's like, oh, have you watched Southside? Oh, you know, I haven't.
I watched it on DVR.
Oh, you know, I'm 3 episodes behind.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have that same.
No one's on the same point.
Yeah. I miss TV, and I miss talking about TV the next day.
We went and saw Marc Maron. He was great, and as he always is. And how many times have we seen Marc? We've seen him at least 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he was great, and he was talking about, like, back in the day. And he went through this whole really funny, like, this whole long bit about, like, waiting to get home to check your answer. Like, you had to wait all day to get home and check your to see if the light was blinking to get your message. Messages to see if somebody called you, and just how we, like, when before we had phones and screens to occupy our time, like, there was so much space that was created. You just, if you had to wait for something, you just had to stand in line and wait for it. There was nothing to entertain you, and just like what did we do with our brains, like, with all that space? And like, me talking about doing a social media detox, I think about that. Like, I feel like I waste so much time looking at my phone. Like, how doesn't it sound amazing? Like, how freeing it sounds to, like, get away from that. But when he's talking about, like, back in the day, I think I've, like, for a long time, I think, like, back in the day refers to somebody older than me, but now I am that person.
Yeah, he did. It was a really funny bit about it started off where he thought of something, but he couldn't remember the name of somebody who did something.
Yeah.
Where now you would just search for it and you'd be done with it.
Yeah.
He was thinking about it the whole day before he could figure out. He had to call a friend to find out what the answer was.
So his friend went to the library. And then when he got home, he had left him a message. So it all came back.
Yeah, it was really funny.
The thing that sparked it all, though, is that he was eating trail mix on his way to work. And he was thinking about peanuts and who was responsible for peanuts or whatever. And he was like, I'm old enough to remember a time when I remember when people started eating trail mix, not hiking.
Yeah, it was really funny.
But yeah, I'm coming to terms with that. I am back in the day.
Speaking of your social media detox, and you've talked about this in the past where you want to do sober January with social media or whatever. But it's funny because you already kind of you have set a time limit on your phone. I've noticed certain amount of time that you're allowed to spend. But every time I see you open your phone, I see the time you've exceeded.
I always say
your
like ignore for today.
Ignore.
So the time limit is just like an annoyance. I'm like, oh, I've got to hit this ignore for today thing.
And it happens really. Sometimes it's like 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what is your time limit? What is your time limit?
An hour. Maybe I just need to change the amount.
Yeah, change it up to two hours.
And stick to it. Okay, so we did Renegade, and then I ran a marathon last weekend. And you were saying that we forgot to talk about the actual dry try. Like, we were talking about going to the dry try, but we didn't talk about doing the actual dry try. Is that correct?
I think so.
We did the dry try, and I won the dry try.
Yeah, you did win. You came in fifth place in Illinois.
So this was like qualifying for a state dry try. So we did the dry try, which is 2,000 meter row, 300 reps on the floor,
mm-hmm.
and then a 5K. So I came in first at our studio. I set a studio record.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Oh, we did.
we talked about, you know, your dominance.
Okay.
But we didn't know the official results, how you stacked up
against the state
of Illinois.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You came in fifth. I came in tenth.
I was trying to be brief about it, too. So I came in fifth in my division in state. So I qualified, the top seven qualified mm-hmm. to participate in a statewide dry try. And it was, so I ran a marathon last Saturday morning.
This is a marathon that you did one in the spring. And it's a marathon that's pretty much set up so you can qualify for the Boston Marathon.
You have to qualify to get into this, and then everyone's there to try to qualify for Boston.
Right, and so in the spring you did one, and you qualified for Boston by a minute.
Yeah, 51 seconds.
51 seconds.
So there's always more people that qualify for Boston than they have spots for.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens then is that even though you hit your qualifying time, the fastest people are who get in. So you have to get so much. There's been a cutoff every year
right.
for the past few years. The cutoff is that's how much under. And last year you had to go almost 5 minutes under. So they've made the qualifying times 5 minutes faster. So even with the 5 minute faster times, I only had a minute and I didn't feel like that was enough to get in. I didn't think I needed 5 minutes. It would have been nice, but I didn't think I needed it. But I thought I needed more than a minute, than 51 seconds.
So you decide you run this other marathon to
get a better qualifying time. And I ran with two of our friends, Leah and Darren, and Darren needed his BQ. Leah also wanted a better one, so we decided to sign up for this, and we've been
BQ is Boston qualifier.
Yes. You know, we're in Chicago marathon training, but we threw this one in. We've been getting really excited for it, and it was in Geneva, which is an hour and a half away, and we thought oh, we'll go and spend the night out there before, since it starts at 6:30 in the morning. So we drove out on Friday and stayed at the Holiday Inn Express in mm-hmm. St. Charles across the street from the mall.
Beautiful.
It also smelled like a bowling alley. It had a pool, though. It was very exciting.
Oh, really?
Darren was very excited that they had a toaster that you could use.
Did you use the pool?
No.
Oh.
No. No.
Or the hot tub?
We were there for 5 minutes. They didn't have a hot tub. It was just it was a very small pool. It was like the size of our dining table, but it had 100 chairs around it, lounge chairs.
Every time you go to a pool in a hotel, though, it's always kids. Because when we go to the Marina Grand, when we go in February, mm-hmm. they have a pool and we always think, oh, it'd be nice to go swimming in February because it's freezing outside.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
we go and it's always 75 kids in there.
We're how dare they? Don't they know this? Yeah. We ate some Italian food and there was good people watching at the Italian restaurant.
Everybody was a marathoner?
No.
Oh.
It was the total opposite. So everyone was a suburbanite on a date. There was, speaking of Stranger Things, a woman was sitting next to us who looked like Finn Wolfhard's mom in Stranger Things, who's wants to have the affair with Billy or whatever. Yeah. That's the look.
Her current look now is how they looked in the 80s.
That was the look. Yeah. So we stayed at the Holiday Inn and got ready for our race, and before the race, my friend Darren, who I was running with, gave me a little pep talk about how hard I had trained. And he was like, you've trained, he said, I've trained the hardest of all of us. I don't know if that's true, but those words like really stuck with me. I think we've all trained really hard. I think we've all trained the hardest of anybody, but, him saying that to me, like when things got tough during the race, which no matter how hard you train, things get tough during a marathon. And him saying that to me, like really helped me and stuck with me too. So it's great to be able to run with friends, which has been a new thing to me as well. This marathon is 8 loops. Mm-hmm. So when you say that to people, they're like, oh, that sounds horrible. But I kind of like it. Like, it, instead of thinking about 26 miles, you think about it in eighths. So there's like one down, 7 to go. Mm-hmm. And the first like 5 or 6 go by really fast. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm almost done with this. And then it gets hard and then you're done. So, but it was good because like Darren had his husband and his family and some of our friends were on one end. You and my parents were on another end. So we had people cheering for us 16 times, I guess. And it makes it really easy to spectate.
It's the best type of race to spectate at because you know exactly when you're going to be coming around because you know everybody that's right. There's so few people running this race.
300 people run it.
Yeah, you recognize. I'm like, oh, here's this guy. Here's the guy that looks like Lloyd Bridges. I know that right after that, Molly's coming.
Yeah.
You know, oh, here's the guy in the St. Patrick's Day tank top. I know Darren's coming after that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really easy to spectate.
Yeah. I knew like every person who was in my group because your group is by your age because you're going by your qualifying time. And so you're running with other people with the same, like if you are 40, you are running the same pace as the other 40
right.
year olds, which is unlike any other race, give or take. And so I really got to know everyone. And so I've, of course, like looked at like the photos and I'm like, okay, that's Brandy. I'm going to look at her splits. She had a successful race. So I've analyzed everyone in my division. I've analyzed all of their races and the people who beat me and had successful races, what they did, the people that I beat who had less successful races, the mistakes that they made. Like I've really studied all of this. Yeah, just learning from what works and pacing wise.
When you're a spectator, you recognize the runners, but the runners also recognize you as well too.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of people that come around and say, thank you for coming out. Thank you for clapping.
Oh, that's so nice.
There was a guy who he would do a different thing every time. Like a guy who he'd give me the gun.
Oh, I didn't know this. That's cool.
There's another guy. Then he came around again. He gave me the fist.
Yeah.
Another guy, you know, wave. He gave me like a different.
That's so, I didn't know that. That's so nice.
A different acknowledgement each time.
There was like at one water station, I would get water. I had to like go to the same guy every, like somehow I made it like superstitious. Like I had to go to the same guy every time. And I like thanked him at the end. And that's so nice though. I didn't know that the runners were like thinking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody is really in good shape and they've run marathons before and they're skilled runners, everyone in this thing. When the race starts, everybody kind of takes off and goes their one loop. And then I kind of went up the course a little bit to see how everybody's going to look after the first loop. Mm-hmm. And there was this kid that came out. I don't know where he came. I was like, is this kid in the race? It was like 15 minutes. Like he finished the first 3 miles in 15 minutes. He is so far ahead of everybody, but he looked like he was a spaz.
He had on a cotton shirt and basketball shorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next guy who was probably 2 minutes behind him was just like, he was a robot. I was like, oh man, this guy, this first guy, I don't think he's going to make it. The second guy, he's going to be one of the top finishers. Yeah. The first guy had the look of a guy who lives in Geneva.
Who just got up that morning.
Like, yeah, he lives right by the course and was like, oh, I guess there's something going on. I'm going to run real fast for 26 miles. I was walking down the path thinking, oh, I probably have like 10 more minutes before I see anybody. Uh-huh. And when he showed up, I was like, oh my God. I thought he was just like, because it's a weird thing where they have your race, a very important race that's happening, but it's also on a path in Geneva where other people are,
yeah,
which
yeah.
I find annoying.
It's okay.
you know, guys riding their bike.
Yeah. People just walking across the path.
People walking across the path. I'm like, come on. Yeah. Just go somewhere else today.
It was annoying a couple times, but it wasn't too bad.
Like, I thought he might have just been a jogger out on a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And I found myself, like, taking back claps. Like, I would clap for people as they came by, but then I would, like, I see somebody without a number, and I would like, hold up my clap. Like, why would I do that? Just because they're not in the race, but I was like, well, all right, let's keep it going. And oh, my God, they don't have a bib on. Stop clapping.
So, I had a good race. I PR'd. I have an almost 3-minute cushion now, so I ran 3:37. And so now, this is the
most excruciating part of the Boston.
So, this is new. Everything's a little bit. I didn't really get into marathon running and training until like a little over a year ago. So a lot of things have been first and new, but I've done a lot in the past 16 months. And so the new thing is I registered for Boston on Monday, and now you wait to hear. So my friends who have done it before, my friend Leah has done it. This is her fourth or fifth time.
Yeah, she ran an awesome
race. I guess
she's
done it. This will be her fifth. She's done it four times. And yeah, she got a great BQ also and had a great race. And so she's been through this a bunch of times, and she's like, we'll hear Thursday or Friday. I'm like, okay, that's fine. We all feel good, like we have enough time, but it's just nerve-wracking until you know for sure. And really all we're doing is getting the go-ahead to train in the winter when it's cold and then run the Boston Marathon, which is usually like a miserable race too.
And then to what is this the goal?
There's never, we'll never
what
be
do you
satisfied.
Do, like, what do you do? You always will want to try to get into Boston. That will be a thing. But what is the thing that's above that?
I guess just, I don't know, to keep trying to PR. But then I guess we're all like in our 40s. Like, we're going to hit a point where we kind of like plateau. I don't know. My next goal is to run Chicago Marathon in 3 weeks. But like my friend Darren was saying, he wanted to try to make a goal for how many Bostons you can qualify in a row. So that's a fun goal.
Is it?
I don't know. But then I think like, oh, maybe I'll do a triathlon. Maybe I'll do an ultra. I had signed up to do a Ragnar, and then I realized this week that it was just like too much to do Boston and the Ragnar, so I'm not going to do that. But it was also like the communication of the Ragnar, like my running.
What's Ragnar? What is
it's,
that?
It's a relay race, and so we would run from Chicago to Madison. And so I realized that like not only was it the training for both was probably going to be too much, but I already like have a constant flow of communication with my running friends. I can't have two groups of constant flow of communication. Every now and then I'm smart about something, and I was like, the smart decision is to not do this. They have like 8 months to replace me. I think they'll be fine.
And another smart thing that you did was like you ran this marathon, you qualified for Boston, but then
come back to this.
Since you qualified to the state dry try,
was the same
finals
day.
Was the same day happening like at 4 in the afternoon it was going to start. So you were going to actually run this marathon and try to qualify for Boston, which you did, and then at 4 o'clock do another dry try for some reason at Orange Theory.
Come on. Because I have to. You had told me not to, and I'm like, oh, whatever, I can do it. And then I had a conversation with our coach at Orange Theory, and he's like, you've got different goals than this, and I don't want you to get hurt. And I was like, okay, I won't do it. Why is it that you'll tell me to do something, and I'm like, I can still do it, and then someone else tells me, and I'm like, oh, you're right.
With everything. There's another dry try coming up.
Yeah, next weekend.
I guess we're getting to the end of September.
Are you going
to
do it?
I don't want to. They're hard, and I don't like them.
Don't do it. It's fine.
But then it
will happen, and you'll have some FOMO.
I'll want to.
I'm trying to do a really good job of like recovering and then preparing for Chicago. And now we're all getting really excited for, you know, there's a lot of talk about like, when are we doing the pasta dinner? What are we doing after the marathon to celebrate? Like everyone's getting, our tapers start soon, so everyone's kind of getting like anxious and excited about Chicago and making plans, and it's, you know, it's happening. And so it's a little weird having just run a marathon to like switch gears and get excited again. I need a little downtime.
I did notice what on our Google calendar the added pasta dinner half acre.
Friday night is pasta dinner, group dinner, and then on Sunday afternoon after the race, we're all going to meet at Half Acre. So anyway, I'm trying to like recover, and I'm trying to figure out like what kind of shape I'm in and if everything's okay, and trying to make smart decisions, making some smart decisions, making some bad decisions, figuring it out. But I like to go to the expo on Friday because it gets really busy on Saturday. And then the day before, I like to like sleep as late as I can because you don't sleep very well the night before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want to keep Saturday really like, I'll run a couple miles to shake out, but I want to keep it really like chill. So Leah sent me a thing about how I think we've talked about this on the podcast about Tyler and Dustin from The Bachelorette are running it, and mm-hmm. they like Tyler does those New York runs, and I couldn't do it because we were in New York because we were at the Mets game, and I've been harassing Dustin on Instagram to come and run with us. And anyway, so they're gonna have a shakeout run on Saturday morning before the marathon. So of course I signed up for it, and when she sent it to me, I like clicked on it and it was already waitlisted, and it's a $5 donation to their, they do like a charity that helps kids that live in like food deserts, or, and so it's a donation to that. And I'm like, screw all my like what I normally do to prepare. I'm going to this fun run. So I was on the wait list. I was like, oh, okay. So then this week I was at work, and I was answering an email, and it was an email that was like needed to be answered. Like somebody needed an answer about something like right away. It had like a deadline to it. And I'm like in the middle of composing this email, and I see an email pop up from the Sweat Life, who is like sponsoring this. And they're like, you are like something about me being off the wait list, that tickets were available. And I like was like, look at this work email, and clicked on the link to get the tickets, and I got two tickets for it. So I think one of my friends who's a runner that also likes The Bachelor,
who's this?
Lainey. She's the only other person I run with that has this, also likes The Bachelor. I can talk her into it. So we were talking about it, and I'm like, this might be dumb. She's like, yeah, but the people watching will be really good. Yeah, though, so
it'll be fun.
Anyway,
now my coworker Mary brought this up because, so you ran this marathon in Geneva where you stayed at the Holiday Inn, mm-hmm. and I stayed here at home
because you had to work late,
and then I just met you out when it started out in Geneva on Saturday morning. Now this next marathon in Chicago in October, what's the sleeping arrangement like? Are we going to be allowed to sleep in the same bed?
Yeah, we did that before.
But not, you didn't get as good of a time.
I didn't sleep well at the Holiday Inn. We were, our room like looked down to the parking lot, and it had really bright lights in the parking lot that like were like shining into our room, and we were like at some point taking Leah's like comforter off her bed and trying to like hang it over the window to like black it out.
We try to do that sometimes here with the lightning.
And it was loud, like there was a wedding going on in St. Charles, and people, like some of the wedding party was staying, there was like a sign up for like the wedding party was staying there, like it had been like the rehearsal dinner, because we saw like people dressed up fancy. That's who was staying there, runners and then like the wedding party, and they were like really loud, and our room smelled bad, and I feel like I never slept that night,
which I think probably is a natural thing. You never really sleep that well before the marathon. It's like the night before
I think I'll be okay. I mean, I can go sleep in the cat room if I need to. So our guest bedroom is our foster cat room, and we have a really sweet mother cat and baby cat right now. And some night before this last race, it was stormy and Zuzu was nervous, so I went and slept in there. And when I woke up the next morning, I realized like there's so much like cat fur and litter and stuff in that bed. It's disgusting. Yeah. If you ever just stay with us, it will all be super clean. But the cats are hanging out there, and we even keep that bed covered up, and still it was just like, I woke up, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was sleeping. This is horrible.
I know, because like a lot of times when we're in bed watching television or something, you'll always like point out like I'm shaking my legs or pulling the covers too much.
But once you fall asleep, you're better. It's like before, it's like in the early stages is when the shaking and the pulling happens. Like you get in bed before me and I look over and your legs are just like, I don't know how to describe this on radio, moving a lot.
I'm just kind of getting comfortable. I'm just kind of figuring things
out.
Like
shifting back and like one leg goes in, one leg goes out, one leg goes in, one leg goes out. That's like pulling up and back.
Just figuring things like, what's the best spot right in tonight? What's it going to be? Because a lot of times there's an animal at the foot. So I have to figure out where, am I going to spread my legs? So the animal goes in between them. Am I going to put my legs together so the animal goes to the right of them? Do I hinge up my legs? So it go the animals by my knees. There's a lot to figure out. There's a lot of movement that needs to happen.
All right. So that's enough running and renegade talk for now.
No, so will Molly and I will still talk about the running after the recording stops, I'm sure. But congratulations. I think it's an amazing accomplishment.
Thank you. So hopefully sometime next week, we'll find out if I get into Boston or not. But
we'll have an update.
The weight is excruciating. But I have like friends who are going through it too. So we're helping each other, I guess helping each other out during this.
Yeah.
Maybe encouraging each other to be anxious.
I think it's always better when you have a group of friends that are looking for the same thing. Yeah, you're not.
And I mean, whatever. It's not
kind of part of a team.
There's a lot more stressful things in life than this. It's kind of a dumb thing to be so stressed out over. It's just we've put a lot of effort.
I mean, it's not as dumb as the dry try or something being stressed. Like this week we had at Orange Theory, we had a 12-minute run for distance. Mm-hmm. So the night before, like I changed my class time to get so I was sure I was going to have enough rest. I made sure I had the right socks and my favorite running shirt.
Yeah.
Why?
Because you're putting effort into it.
I know, but it's so, like, who cares?
I didn't do it because I felt like I'm not totally 100% yet. But I was like, were they talking about the distance that people have run yet? And like, did they have it written down somewhere? Or were they saying like, all right, 6:15, somebody got 1.8 or whatever. You got to beat that. And you were like, no. And I was like, I had a feeling. I knew that. So I was happy not to do this. What's the point if nobody, if you don't get it, they don't write it down.
Yeah, you love the credit. But I'm like, why am I changing my whole life for a 12-minute run at Orange Theory? I'm ashamed sometimes when I leave Orange Theory that I put so much effort, or not even effort, because I'm fine with the effort.
Preparation
for, yeah, exactly. Too much thought. And this is something dumb. So I understand when there are actual consequences.
It's not dumb.
For Boston, which is a huge accomplishment when, you know, you're talking about it and you're trying to figure things out and talking it through with your friends. And it's like, I'm so grateful that you have this group.
Sometimes that
I don't have to hear about it quite as much.
Sometimes, like, when a marathon is tough or a run is tough, I guess more like a marathon, when it gets tough, I think, like, okay, you can't slow down now. You can't, like, give up now because you have made your friends and family, like, endure this for so long. You've spent time at work analyzing other people's races instead of, like, responding to an email. You have done, like, spent way too much to, like, give up in the, like, two.
If that keeps you going. Miles. Yeah. That's good incentive.
I guilt myself into keep going. As we, like, wait whenever, like, they post something on Facebook, like an update, they always say, thank you for your patience, which means you guys are being really impatient and you need to chill out.
Yeah.
Like, thank you for your patience. And so we read the comments and they're hilarious because it's like so many people sucking up. Like, thank you for your hard work, Boston Athletic Association. This is amazing. You know, whatever. It's like so much sucking up. And you're like, this isn't going to get you.
Yeah, like the moderator of the Boston Marathon Facebook page is going to say, like, oh, this person is nice to me. Let's get them in.
Though there have been thoughts, though, like the people who are super annoying, they'll be like, I still haven't heard anything, whatever. And I'm like, can you not qualify them just for being annoying on Facebook?
The posts are very detailed about what the process is,
and people don't
what they're going
it.
Through.
Like, people question things, and then people comment, like, didn't you read the post? And they're like, well, I hope you're right. You're like, no, they're right. This is exactly what they're saying.
Yeah. People don't.
Like, don't you trust it?
I mean, it was kind of a long post, so I understand people only reading a sentence. But what? Then don't comment if you're not going to read the whole thing.
I read it, like, three or four times.
Yeah. Well, yeah, fine. But so you know what's happening. And I have to say that I'm kind of annoyed. And I'm more annoyed because I just don't like to see you and Leah and people that I care about. It annoys me that you're going through this kind of pain. Not pain, but, like, this anxiety.
Yeah. The more, I guess, you know, the more people qualify. So I guess probably more people cheat too. So they have
to
be really strict.
You caught a cheater at the last one again.
I didn't turn her in. I ran with someone who ran with a coach for two laps, and I thought about turning her in, but the rules were vague.
Murky, yeah.
So I didn't do it, but I didn't like it.
I like that you're on the case, though. It's funny too because he had just finished this amazing race. And then you were asking me, like, I saw this person running with a coach. Should I turn them in? I'm like, let's just enjoy this moment.
Never. I can never enjoy it.
Let's enjoy the accomplishment.
Okay, remember 10 minutes ago when I said we were fishing about running? Yeah,
this is how it happens. Okay. I brought it up a couple,
okay,
I
brought it a couple times. 3 minutes and there's 15 things on the list. So what are you going to talk about?
What else is on the list?
Dunking your... I'm going to run through the list and you pick one more thing to talk about. And then the other things we can talk about next week then. So dunking your food in your drink. Rick Ocasek, the Washington Post article about the Michael Vick dogs, Cameron Esposito's article about breaking up with her wife, the decade of lost music, our broken toaster and coffee maker, and when you're doing work Instagram and you like your own personal Instagram.
Oh yeah, and we both kind of do this because we both shuttle between our personal accounts and a work account. You do stuff for Lulu's Locker,
yeah,
and I do a lot of Instagramming for WGN. And every time I'm on the WGN page, I go to my personal page and make sure that I have liked all my photos. So then I'll go to just flip back and I'll see 6 likes. I'm like, oh, amazing. And then I look and it's a 6 WGN likes. I'm like, yeah, that was you. You dummy. You just liked your own posts. The Rick Ocasek stuff, like, I would put this under our staff recommendations.
Okay.
These are things
to look up. Yeah.
Rick Ocasek, there was a really great piece, I think, on NPR where the Matthew Cause from Not a Surf wrote a thing about how he had met Rick Ocasek in New York City, and Rick Ocasek took a liking to him, invited him to his house in New York, mm-hmm, and showed him everything and like helped produce their first record. Rob Sheffield, he's a great writer about, mm-hmm, music. Love is a Mixtape is one of my favorite books. He wrote a really great thing in Rolling Stone about Rick Ocasek. I would recommend that. There's a great piece in the Washington Post,
yeah,
about the current state of
all the Michael
Vick.
I think there's
dogs.
11 Michael Vick dogs left.
Yeah.
And it's been 12 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
And what that case has done for, it was so horrible, but in turn, it's showed rescues that even dogs that have been in fight, like pit bulls that have been in fighting rings, can still be adoptable. And
yeah.
So it's really changed a lot of mindsets.
Raise
about
awareness of,
yeah, yeah,
rescue.
And I mean, we have stickers because I watched the National Geographic series about the Vick dog and about best friends, and it made me want to rescue a dog and be fine with rescuing a pit bull. So it led to we're looking at right now.
She's like staring at you. She heard you talking about her.
But anyway, so it goes through all the Vick dogs and gives you updates on if they were adopted or not, and if they're still alive when they died, and just a little bit about each of them. So it was really nice to go through that.
The Cameron Esposito thing, she wrote a great piece in the New York Times just about what it's like to have, struggle to get married as a lesbian woman. And now she's going through a divorce, really, mm-hmm, heart-wrenching piece, but, hilarious as, mm-hmm, well. Cameron Esposito, who somebody once classified as a C-list celebrity. She's great. I would recommend that. And there's a great piece in Esquire about a decade of lost music, where it's that era of where you would just buy stuff on iTunes.
Yeah.
So
you weren't buying CDs anymore.
You weren't buying CDs.
But you didn't have Spotify yet.
Right.
It was the era between that.
So somewhere on your Zune is the song from the Kaiser Chiefs.
Or your iPod Shuffle.
Yeah, just kind of forgot all about these bands and you don't know where any of these songs are. Mm-hmm. It's a really great article there. So I would just check out those. And then we could talk about our toaster and our coffee maker next week.
Yeah. Ooh. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I know, very exciting. And the dunking, this is a thing that when I was a kid, I used to dunk things in my coffee. Like when I was one of those children that had coffee when I was 8, for some reason, my parents allowed us to have coffee with cream and sugar. That's not healthy.
Is it okay in Europe? Because they were German. Is it okay in Europe to do that?
I don't know.
What it is?
And I would have cereal and I would put sugar on top of
and
my
it was,
cereal.
You had sugary cereal, right?
Yeah, like Rice Krispies or Fruit Loops or Apple Jacks. I would put sugar on, I would load, I would get sugar and load up.
I never even knew like where sugar was in my house.
Yeah. So yeah, when I was like 8, I would read the sports section. I would have a cup of coffee at the kitchen table. Waiting for my Little League baseball game to start at noon or whatever, reading the box scores. And like my mom did hair, so she would have in the basement, there was like a beauty shop, mm-hmm. is what she called it. And it's where the beauty shop was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a train of old ladies would come in uh-huh. on Saturday morning, yep. which was terrible for a young kid. Because then you got to talk to all the, you know, yeah. It was, you know, a bunch of blue hairs walking and getting their hair done, you know, with their babushka. You know, and I just want to drink my coffee.
As any 8-year-old, no cartoons or anything.
So yeah, then you know, have to talk to these old ladies that would come through. So there was tons of people in the house. Mm-hmm. So like we'd always have donuts or some sort of pastries out, and I always would dunk my dunk my donut into my coffee. And yeah. eat my donut, and you just find this repulsive.
I think it's gross, because there's like an exchange of, I don't like the combination of the beverage with the food. You like drop things in it. There's like an exchange that happens. So now the version of this is that like I bake every week, and I make muffins, and I make like energy balls and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. so one of your like rituals every day is that you have your muffin and your coffee, and you alternate, like yeah, you take a bite sips. Of the muffin.
I don't dip any, or I don't dunk
no, you
it
just
anymore.
Combine them in your mouth. Yeah. So you take a bite of the muffin and a sip of the coffee.
One of my great joys
time.
In life.
And it just really, it just really grosses me out.
It's just like so good having
the
like
combination.
The
combination, but. Like I
but
think
you didn't dunk Oreos when you were
when
a kid.
You do it. Like I know, like I'm glad you like appreciate the effort I put into baking. And like when you like it, I was like kidding you. This week about are you doing your alternating bite and sip? But then when I actually have to see it,
it's so good. But like, you didn't dunk Oreos when you were a kid?
No, I don't.
And the stuff gets like at the bottom, and then you kind of like shake it up and like put it all together. You didn't do that?
No. You also drink cereal milk, and I think that's disgusting. As
well, I haven't had cereal in.
No, but when you have, you used to drink the milk, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I would actually refill. If whatever milk was left, I wouldn't drink the milk. I put more cereal in uh-huh. and kind of, you know.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then if there was a little milk, I would drink the milk.
I don't know. I just don't like the combination of the food and the drink together.
But when you're eating dinner, don't you have a drink and you
yeah, but
like
not the same time. Though.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's combining it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Or putting it in your drink. That grosses. It's like the exchange of bits that I don't like. The other thing that you're fond of doing is folding your food in half.
Yeah.
Too. Like a piece of pizza, you always, even like, you know, like classically, like a big New York slice, like you fold that in half, like, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm picturing on like a kind of a flimsy paper plate. You fold that in half, you kind of turn your head sideways to eat it. Yeah. Okay, fine. But you've taken this method and applied it to anything that you can fold
yeah.
and
like
eat.
Like you'll make a piece of avocado toast.
Or just a regular piece of pizza, like a small piece of pizza.
Like
you
a
fold
tavern
too.
Cut. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And
I'm a food folder.
You do.
Is that a weird thing?
Yeah. I think it's, I've never seen anybody else do, I mean, like, again, when it is, sometimes it's necessary, but you'll do it, like, whenever you can, you go for the fold, and I think, like, it makes it too efficient, like, I want to enjoy my food more and not, like, fold it.
Yeah, I'm finishing it half the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to feel like I'm eating more than that, but your instinct is to fold it.
A lot of times with a tavern cut pizza too, I will eat the top off the pizza, mm-hmm. eat the toppings. Mm-hmm. Depends on what it is. Sometimes with the fork,
yeah.
But, sometimes just with my hand, I'll eat the topping and then I'll fold the crust in half and uh-huh. just have the crust separately.
You also eat things all together, like. Instead of like, okay, let's see, like you got like coleslaw and a sandwich and french fries or something, like you eat the you always eat the coleslaw first.
I always get the coleslaw.
And then you eat maybe your sandwich and then you eat the french fries instead of like having a little bit of sandwich and a little bit of coleslaw and a little bit of french fries, like you compartmentalize
yeah,
it
yeah.
too.
all the time.
Yeah.
Even when we're out, like last night we had a chicken, Nashville chicken sandwich.
Vegan, though.
And some fries, and I had the fries. I think I ate the fries first.
No, you ate the sandwich, first and then
I ate the fries. Yeah. I don't think there's anything that we're separating.
I'm not saying there's wrong with it. There's just like the peculiarities of how you eat, though. The dunking, the folding, the compartmentalizing. They are uniquely you.
All right. Well, we can end this because I feel like I need another coffee and dunk some stuff in it.
A sippy and a dippy.
So, yeah, we'll be back next week. We apologize for the hiatus, and we'll hopefully have an update on Molly's marathon. Maybe my dry try, my dry try update that you're waiting for. And that's it, I guess, right?
I think
Do we have
so.
Anything else that we can say? This is too
this
long.
This is enough.
All right. Bye.
Bye.